Hey there, oddballs. In the paranormal news, we have Dan Aykroyd's Haunted Hotels TV show, a South Korean soccer team that has sex dolls in the audience. This month's Cryptid Corner is totally gonna suck. Blood, that is. Yeah, we're talking Chupacabra. And our special guest, Hollywood psychic for the last 35 years, was the psychic of Melanie Griffith and Gary Busey. If it's odd to you, friend, it's on the odd to Newfoundland.
It's the odd to Newfoundland. Ghostly greetings from your host, Jonathan. Mysteries, ghosts, monsters, and lore. East Coast esoterica and so much more. If it's odd to you, friend, it's on the odd to Newfoundland.
Ghostly greetings from the oldest city in North America. I'm your host, John Mallard, bringing you the best in East Coast esoterica. You, my friends, have stumbled upon the Odd the Newfoundland Paranormal Podcast. Welcome to episode 92 of your monthly paranormal variety show. Having you here is better than when you see cat interrupting like really important Zoom meetings. It's like just people who've got a lot of money and they're like talking about the most serious stuff, and then all of a sudden just the cat interferes and everyone's all like, oh, cute kitty. Oh, or having you here is even better than when we all heard that the NHL are actually going to have a playoffs. Not that, you know, friggin' matters to me, because I'm a Detroit Red Wings fan and I'm doomed to not only be alone in self-isolation, I also had to be alone with my crappy hockey team. Why? Because you're wonderful, a masterpiece, beautifully made, important to people because you're important to me. Highly favored by your creator, or the law of averages and physics working in tandem, you, my friend, are an oddball, and on this show, your family, and we are one. How's life treating you? I hope things are going okay for you guys. They've been going pretty good for me. I hope I sound better than last episode. My God, what a dog episode. I'm so sorry about that. The audio was absolutely horrendous, but I must admit, it had nothing at all to do with COVID. It had everything to do with the fact that I actually changed locations in my house for a studio. And like, I had this brilliant idea, man. I'm going to make my own little studio. Everything's going to sound great. I'm so excited. And then, you know, one thing led to another. And next thing you know, it sounds like I'm echoey, really. And oh my God, it was just horrible. It was just horrible. whatever you guys do. If you downloaded that show when it first came out, go back and re-download it again. I actually updated the audio and cleaned it up a little tiny bit. I'll admit to you know, just not putting on my best work. So I hope you guys actually give it a second shot. And I really, really appreciate everybody who's here. And, you know, if you're here today, that means you're either coming back or you're brand new to the show. So thank you so much for taking the time to, well, live in my world for a while here on the Odd to Newfoundland Paranormal Podcast. It's been just a wild ride so far. A six-year-long ride. Actually, next month is the six-year anniversary. And just quite the milestone for me as a podcaster. I can't think of a lot of things in my life I've done for more than 6 years, you know, besides be a husband and a... I was about to say, except for being a husband and a wife. Boy, the things you guys don't know about me. No, but the whole... I feel like 6 years is a long period of time to do anything, really. So I'm really, really glad you guys went along for the ride. And, of course, we have some new, yeah, you guessed it, some new subscribers. So I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to shout those guys out right now. All right, in no particular order whatsoever, we have Greg, Darren, Sarah, Dalton Giselle, Lassie 8678, Goya, PBGE5B6FH9HFFZR. You know what, guys? You really got to put your name on Podbean when you follow me. My God. PBGE5B69HFZR. Very good to meet you. And last but certainly not least, a lady by the name of Mouse. Guys, thank you so very much for subscribing to the Odd the Newfoundland Paranormal Podcast. And because you guys have done that, you've unlocked the horrible terror joke of the show. So here it goes. What happened to the man who didn't pay his exorcist? His house got repossessed. Okay. I thought it was funny. Listen, if you're wherever you're from, whatever you're doing, you're listening to the show, do me a favor, subscribe, will you? That'd be great. I hope you're all doing well. I hope the isolation isn't getting you too down. Hope you're not, locking yourself in the basement and talking to yourself like I am right now. It's kind of a strange feeling. Anyway, seems like a pretty good jump off point. Let's just get right into the paranormal news.
Somewhere between the funnies and the obituaries is, yes, the paranormal news.
So, like, am I the only one who is ecstatic about this? Okay, TNE, this station, has a new original 10-part documentary series called Hotel Paranormal. And the OG himself, one of my Canadian heroes, who also has a very fine Crystal Skull vodka, I might add, Dan Aykroyd, is going to be narrating it. Produced by Toronto-based Saloon Media, a Blue Ant Studios company, follows the terrifying true stories of those who have come face-to-face with otherworldly hotel guests. Narrated by Canadian icon Dan Aykroyd, who is no stranger to the unexplained, each episode features spine-tingling stories of paranormal encounters told from stays at grand hotels, highway motels, and short-term rentals around the world. Can't imagine why they'd be short-term. From hotel workers and guests witnessing objects flying across the room to uncovering trapped ancient spirits and experiencing demonic possession, Hotel Paranormal brings to life terrifying encounters with dramatic recreations and paranormal expert insights. The world broadcast premiere of Hotel Paranormal actually aired May 15th at 9 p.m. And I hope you guys tuned into that. If not, check your local listings. Get on there. Support Dan. He's an awesome Canadian. Come on. He's one of the original Ghostbusters, too. I mean, how can you not love this guy? He's like just so much cooler than me. So you know what? Just support him, okay? Just please do it. You know what? This coronavirus thing, people aren't just going to take it lying down. And don't think for three seconds that any creature out there who's actually set with protecting humanity is going to be taking it lying down, or in this case, swimming down, because a Japanese spirit Amabi, a mythical mermaid monster, has been revived to ward off the coronavirus. A mythical mermaid monster from Japanese folklore has made a resurgence in the country's popular culture recently as people hope for the end of the coronavirus. Amabi is a 19th century Japanese spirit known as yokai, who is said to ward off plagues. According to legend, Amabi was said to have appeared to be a samurai and told him to draw a picture of her to show it to people to keep them safe from a coming pandemic, according to BBC News. The fishy, long-haired, bird-like yokai has inspired everything in Japan in recent weeks, from cakes and noodles to face masks and hand sanitizers. She even sparked the Amabi challenge on Twitter that urges people to actually draw her. How cool is that? And I'm not going to lie, these things have popped up all over Twitter, and some people have even been sharing them to my Facebook page, so this is actually taking off. I guess, you know, in times of need, we sometimes do, well, rely on the old ways. A sea lion named Leo in Aquarium in Oklahoma recently drew a respectable likeness. He started drawing Amabi in late March, practicing for about a month. The sea lion's keeper, Saisho, said, according to Channel News Asia in Singapore, "We performed the drawing of Amabi, hoping the pandemic of the new coronavirus will come to an end soon." And if you ever see a picture of this seal, he's a sea lion, sorry. He's absolutely adorable. And it's pretty cool when they can paint anyway. Amabi's comeback in March when the Coyote University Library tweeted Amabi drawing from 1846, according to CNA. A man who drew Amabi on the side of a truck said, "I travel all the country with the goods, and Amabi pray for the disease to go away, please," according to BBC News. While some yokai are evil spirits, others like Amabi are said to have benevolent powers and are well-loved in Japan. Which is, I think, is great. Yokai often play the role of helping people process unpleasant feelings or situations. They can sometimes be a kind of pressure valve for when things get tense, said Hiroko Yoda, co-author of the book Yokai Attack, the Japanese Monster Survival Guide. There are a lot of dark news at the moment. I think people who see all of that want to enjoy themselves, and why not? Well, speaking of spirits, it's not just Japan that are, going to You call on some old friends of ours because, haunted house reports are on the rise during this pandemic, and it's getting a little bit out of hand. In fact, we're seeing almost a 50% increase of reports. Could this be people going stir crazy? Could this be people being stuck at home and actually noticing there's spirits around? You be the judge. But anyhow, John Tenney, a well-known paranormal researcher, says more people are at home and are probably just noticing more of their environment. The new normal is bringing out the paranormal, says John Tenney. Tenney, a paranormal researcher and former host of TV's Ghost Doctor, says he used to receive 2 to 5 calls a month from people convinced their homes are haunted. But since the COVID-19 restrictions started, he says he gets 10 calls a week. That's a massive increase. The New York Times also noticed the uptick. Newspaper interviewed Tenney this week for a feature about the many people around the U.S. who are stuck at home with what they believe are roommates from beyond the grave. There is no scientific evidence for the existence of ghosts, the newspaper hopefully notes. Tenney spoke to, as so it happens, host Carol Off about what's got people so spooked. Here's part of their conversation. What kind of stories are you getting? Everything from typical knocks and footsteps in the hallway to some very new, strange occurrences like people hearing whispered voices through their television sets or getting text messages from long-deceased friends and relatives. And what do you make of all this? If you're going to allow or believe that ghosts exist, then people are seeing an uptick of ghosts. They're in a heightened emotional state. They've been sequestered. They're spending time in their house, which they normally don't do at certain hours. Most people are gone at work, so they're not used to hearing the pops and creaks in their house normally. But if there are ghosts, perhaps they've had a ghost in their house all along, and now they're just finally noticing it. Which brings me to my point, John Tenney. Do you ever think that maybe the ghosts are just bored too? They're stuck for eternity there, let alone a few months. Moving on. Wandering cows stampede through streets in Welsh town is our next. I love it when cows are in the news, or monkeys. I love cows and monkeys. A wandering herd of cows, one with a plastic chair stuck over its head, paraded into a Welsh town and ended up stampeding through the streets. Noah Williamson, 12 years old, captured a video of the herd stampeding through the streets hour after he and his brother fled out of the way of the oncoming animals. There's actually a video that shows the cows running through the street with one of them bowfies toward the rear, moving a little slower to a plastic chair being stuck over its head. Everybody has the 8-pack of beer and, we have to cut that plastic thing so we don't, kill fish. Just start cutting our freaking chairs up to save the cows. Angerhard Williams said the cows belonged to her uncle who was out of town. She said the herd is known to roam, but the stampede through town was very unusual. She said the cow with the plastic chair in its head was able to shake itself free of it when the herd headed back towards its usual grazing area. I thought it was just a really friggin' weird story, so I thought I'd at least share with you guys. So there you go. Oh my god. Oh, when I read this story, this next one, I had to shook my head. Or should I say melon? I'm just going to let you guys listen to this and you just judge for yourself how ridiculous this all is.
Two men walked into a Virginia Sheets wearing melons as masks. However, they weren't trying to protect themselves from the coronavirus. Police say they were wearing the masks as disguise. Louisa police posted the pictures on social media to try to get help identifying the two men. Along with getting a lot of jokes, officers say they were able to make an arrest. Katie Johnston for WJZ.com.
Where do I even freaking start with these two dumbasses? Like, seriously. Okay, so first off, someone's got to make the obvious joke here that, look, you see them on the camera, and I kid you not, this is probably the most creative way I've ever seen anybody disguise their face. And I mean, like these guys are social distancing while they're robbing this place. It's what's killing me the most about this, okay? Like, so they're 6 feet apart. They both have a watermelon on their head. Like, how do you even hand over the money without dying laughing is my question. Like I had this thing in my head where these two actually robbed the store, but they're actually, like, these passionate behind closed doors lovers. And, like, as they go to the escape vehicle, one is like, honey, do you know where my keys are? And then they're so hyped up from you know, the adrenaline of robbing this store with melons on their head. One melon asks the other guy, he's just like, you know, we should run away and get married. Let's go and marry. And he's like, sorry, I can't elope. Oh, my God. Okay. All right. I'll stop. One more story. Okay. I promise this one will be serious. I scout. Oh, God. It's not serious at all. It's South Korean soccer team. Use sex dolls to fill the empty stadium. Okay. Leaders of the South Korean soccer team might be feeling like boobs after they were exposed for using sex dolls to make an empty stadium look full of fans. FC Seoul placed 30 mannequins around a stadium for a game against Gwangju FC, adding signs of life to stands void of spectators because of the coronavirus pandemic. The soccer club said in a statement it believed the figures were ordinary mannequins. The action on the field must not have been that great. People watching quickly noticed that some of the fake fans were closing, advertising sex toys. And that many of them were especially busty. As the BBC noted, pornography is banned in South Korea, so this is a big time no-no. We tried to add some fun in the no spectator match, FC Seoul said in a statement according to the New York Times, but we have not checked all of the details, and that is clearly our fault. They are sincerely remorseful. The team said it was assured by the doll supplier that the figures weren't sex products. SC Seoul didn't explain why it chose Dalcom, a company known for sex dolls, for the job. Well, I mean, I like the things because they're... maybe because their prices were, you know, great. Dalcom director Cho Young June told the BBC that his sex logo should have been removed from the dolls prior to the game, but there were several hairbands and logos left to be caught by public eye. FC Seoul could face consequences beyond embarrassment. The league has a rule against inappropriate or sexual advertising, so the team could be fined for the stunt. It's not easy to say whether this breaks the rules, as it is not clear violation. And an unidentified league official told ESPN, we are trying to get a clear interpretation, though. And, you know, if you really want to see something friggin' weird, like, I want you to go online right now and just look up for cheering mannequins and FC Seoul. So FCSEOUL. And you'll see these mannequins and cardboard cutouts. And they're all sex dolls. And, like, we're not talking, like, the little cheap blow-up sex dolls either. Like, we're talking the robo kind you, like, you know, gotta, like, put batteries in and all this stuff. The really complicated ones that, you know, I know way too much about. We got a brand new show called Hotel Paranormal with the legendary Dan Aykroyd at the helm. We got the Japanese Amabi spirit coming back to help against the coronavirus. We're seeing a spike in hauntings and house reports of ghosts all across Canada. We have a rampaging herd of cows, one with a freaking chair stuck to his head. We got two melon head thieves, and we got a South Korean soccer team that are definitely going to score after this game. All these stories have been odd to Newfoundland.
C is for your claws so sharp to me. R is for reports we seldom see. Why do we ignore creatures of myth and lore? P is even more puzzling monsters we adore. T is for tales passed through the years. I is for icons of all our fears. D is for discovery of strange creatures in every country. It's the cryptid corner on our way to Newfoundland. Yeah, yeah.
Somewhere between legend and reality lies the Chupacabra, literally translated from Spanish into English as goat sucker. The manner in which it brutally kills, sucking the blood dry from household pets and farm animals, often going so far as to remove their organs, has pushed into the spotlight of cryptozoological attention from its very first sighting all the way back in 1995. Many questions surround this creature and its origins. Some have suggested that it's an alien, while others consider it to be a horrible result of genetic experimentation. The Chupacabra, or goat sucker, received its name from the local press because it leaves its victims with a drop of blood. It was first sighted in the 1990s in Puerto Rico. Then people found evidence of this fear-instilling creature in Latin America, in the southern United States, and later in Africa. The descriptions are, for the most part, very similar. The creature is 5 feet tall, with a pronounced lower jaw, large red eyes, small nostrils, and a razor-thin mouth with curved fangs. It has a rough black coat and, according to witnesses, can change its skin color like a chameleon. Jagged spikes are said to grow on its back. The creature is described as being able to run very fast as well as jump far and high. Author Vlast of Rab describes its appearance as follows. It kind of looks like a dinosaur comparable to a Deinonychus or a Velociraptor. The vampire myth, which is widely known in South America, also plays a role in the reports thanks to the classic bite marks a la Dracula that are found on the cadavers. So what do you think? Did aliens bring it here? Well, some cryptozoologists believe the origin of this chupacabra can be related to UFO sightings. UFO researcher Tiro Armstrong thinks the chupacabra is a wild alien pet wreaking havoc on Earth. Cryptozoological expert Scott Corrales describes the creature as a cross between the gray alien and a terrestrial animal like a porcupine or kangaroo. The creature, he continues, is active day and night. Other animals panic when it comes near them. The chupacabra is very skilled at making itself invisible, and its appearance in nearly every always associated UFO sighting as well. Some groups go as far as to claim that the alien have an organized program designed to eliminate large numbers of people by vampire means, so as to rid the planet of humans, thereby freeing it for alien colonization. Thus far, however, no humans have actually been attacked by a chupacabra. So could it be a mixture of different species? Professor Juan Riviero from Puerto Rico offers a natural explanation for the many dead animals in his country. He claims the rhesus monkeys, which were brought to an island near the coast for experimental purposes, are responsible because they are known to kill for sport. Contradicting this theory are the many witnesses who say they have seen the chupacabra and it does not look like a monkey. Other theories mention genetic experiments conducted by NASA that went awry. In Nicaragua, a chupacabra was allegedly killed by a shepherd during an attack on his herd. The corpse had deep insert eye sockets, soft skin like a bat, notably large claws and fangs, and something resembling a ridge extending down the length of its spine. Veterinarians then examined the creature and thought it looked like a combination of species, but certainly not like any known animal. The coroner let the body soak in the embalming fluid. No further information has been obtained since. Since 1995, the reports have come in about the chupacabra, and it still remains to this very day a very interesting part of cryptozoology, and might I add, a wonderful installment of the Cryptid Corner.
And welcome to Dr. Nora's Lair. Power on. Uh-oh. I'll get the broom.
Hello, and welcome. Laura here. It's been a wild and crazy time. That's pretty much what 2020 has been so far. I do apologize for having to miss last week, or last month, I mean. The time is going crazy. I work, of course, in a hospital setting, and I'm considered essential. So it's been complete and utter busyness. I'm certainly happy to work, and I'm happy to be able to helping in some very small way. But of course, I do apologize to John and you guys, that I wasn't able to provide anything for last month. So this month, I'll be completely honest. I think we all need some good stories. We need some positivity, and we need something that will warm our hearts a little bit, even if it's a science story. So I know we have been hearing a lot about heroes and those people that are struggling through and working so hard in very dangerous circumstances. And we can't forget those people by no means. And we thank them all for their hard work and dedication and complete professionalism in an insane time, a time that we are not familiar with, and a time that is uncomfortable. So I'm thinking of you all. Stay safe, wash your hands, and enjoy a little bit of entertainment with this show for this month. So on the vein of heroes, I wanted to talk a little bit about these little animals called hero shrews. And it's a really cool article by National Geographic. Their scientific name is Schutziosaurus thori, and they're named after Thor from Norse mythology and, of course, all the Avengers movies and Marvel Universe. So these little tiny African mammals have this really intriguing, interlocked, and flexible spine. So they've done x-rays on these new little guys. They were first talked about in 1910 by the Mangbetu people of the Democratic Republic of the Congo. And they told these Western scientists about these rat-sized animals and how a grown man could actually stand on this little guy's back without hurting it. So more research has been done. They've done x-rays of these little hero shrews, and they really have a spine unlike any other animal on Earth. They have thousands of tiny little finger-like projections that allow them to lock into each other and are highly flexible. So it can really smutch up its little body like an inchworm. Its vertebrae can also show signs that it's able to withstand greater than normal amounts of force. So they're really able to survive things like a grown adult person standing on them. It's truly amazing. The story of vertebrae is a story of how we're developed as well. If you go back far enough in human evolutionary history, you'll find our own ancestor, a small shrew-like animal, and it's really how we've evolved. So really tracking those evolutions of the spine is really helping solve some mysteries. No one knows for sure why this little hero shrew has evolved super spine strength and flexibility. One theory is that the animal's spine adaptations let them pry apart palm leaves in the African forest where they live, and then they can get at the juicy little larva within. It makes sense, but no one has ever actually documented them doing it. They're a rare little guy. It's very difficult to study them in their natural habitat. They're quite small, they're skittish, and in the DRC, the Democratic Republic of the Congo, there's been decades and decades of armed conflict, which makes that incredibly challenging and, of course, very tragic. It's a difficult spot. So some of the potential reasons for why their little skeletons and spines form like this is that bones react to repeated high magnitude stresses by building more bone. So just as humans lose bone mass during long periods of bed rest, maybe similar changes can occur in the bones of these little hero shrews, which offer clues into how and why these little wild shrews have really stupendous little spines. One of the examples one of the scientists say is that when you look at the right hand and the left hand of professional tennis players, in their strong hand, the cortex of their radius is much thicker due to the repeated high stresses of them playing professional tennis. However, these little hero shrews are certainly unique, and they clearly evolved in very dramatic ways to accommodate their little lifestyles. If you look at the spine that we're holding right now, by the time a person reaches adulthood, 5 vertebrae at the base of our spines are actually fused together to form a base of the vertebral column, and that's called the sacrum. So this permanent fusion might be considered an even more extreme than what the hero shrews' interlocking vertebrae have done. So it's really like a nice little zipper if you look at the picture of his little vertebrae. So nearly all mammals have 7 vertebrae in their necks, but a few slow-moving species, such as sloths and manatees, they have actually evolved into having fewer vertebrae. It's likely because their mostly sedentary lifestyle requires, of course, less mobility in that area. And sea lions, for example, have a really cool neck, says scientist and physiologist and PhD candidate Danielle Ingle. They lack the interlocking processes between the vertebrae that really restrict motion, and these more flexible necks make them far more effective swimmers. So it's really cool. Nature's always surprising us, for sure. So even though we're stumped, not completely, by the hero shrew's mighty spine, everyone's really intrigued by the animal. The native people in the area of the Congo Basin, the Megbetu, part of their lore in their history is that they would cremate the bodies of the shrews and take them into battle with them. They thought it made them invincible. So there's a really cool sociological, scientific, and physiological evaluation of this little tiny hero shrew. So hopefully this brought a little bit of joy to your day in a very difficult time. I'm thinking of you all. I do apologize again for missing last month, and hopefully we can continue these little nuggets of happiness and fun and oddities to really get through this challenging time. Stay safe. Sending you lots of love. Bye.
Attention all Podbean, iTunes, Stitcher, and TuneIn Radio listeners. The Odd to Newfoundland Paranormal Podcast brings you the best in East Coast esoterica on the first of every month. Together, we can keep it growing by sharing the show on social media, subscribing to the show wherever you may be listening to it from, and by leaving feedback about your favorite episodes. John certainly needs a friend like you to help make his dreams come true, minus the alien abduction dreams. That is not cool at all. The Odd to Newfoundland Paranormal Podcast, always available, always free, always odd.
Before we hear from tonight's amazing guest, I need you guys to hear about a brand new sponsor that I personally went out and grabbed for the Odd to Newfoundland Paranormal Podcast. That's how much I love these guys, because you know what? Look, I'm not the best podcaster in the world, and I'm definitely not the best editor, but these guys made me a pro. The company's name is Accusonus, and I'm talking about their Era 4 bundle. A collection of single-knob audio cleaning plugins that are incredibly fast and easy to use. They get great results with minimal effort. And even if you've never edited audio before, with the Era Bundle, you don't have to be a pro to sound like one. To give you an example, I just want to talk from my heart here about these guys because I love them so much. They have this thing called a de-verberator. Okay, so as you can probably hear, my voice sounds different than in previous episodes. And that's because I actually moved my podcasting studio to a bigger room in my house. And it's great, you know? I got more room to stretch out and quiver with terror as I talk about weird stuff. But unfortunately, this makes my voice, well, kind of echo off the walls of flat surfaces in here. It's just a natural part of the noise. These guys have a thing called a deverberator. With a simple turn of a knob, this thing actually gets rid of my echo. I sound like I'm in a studio. I sound like I'm in a freaking radio station somewhere in a soundproof room with foam on the walls. I sound amazing. And you can sound amazing too. Guys, check them out at acusonus.com. That's acusonus.com. They've got a great deal on their bundle right now. About $500 worth of software for $150. Go check them out. And on with tonight's guest.
It's time to get to tonight's guest, a very special guest tonight. He was young when he discovered his psychic abilities. He spent his childhood studying with established psychics and going to psychic camp to gain a greater understanding of his gifts. Though the loving support of his mother May, he was able to mature in his practice while staying true to his own creative style. He's been a professional psychic for more than 35 years. That's right. I'm 36, so I was 1 year old when he started doing this. Giving readings, performing ghost bustings, and speaking at events and conventions. His clients range from celebrities like Melanie Griffith and Gary Busey to financiers and dog walkers. That's not all, though. He's also an accomplished writer. His book, Growing Up Psychic, From Skeptic to Believer, chronicles his life and path of coming to terms with his own gifts. He's currently working on a second book and writes a weekly column for True Magazine. I am just so lucky tonight to have psychic Michael Bodine on my show. Michael, how are you?
I'm swell, thanks. Thanks for having me on.
I'm just so happy we got through the whole intro that time with not one mess up, right?
Yeah, that was great.
I'm telling you, I'm getting, you know, after about 700 times, you get good at this. So we're just going to move on. You know, this is a time of turmoil in the world, unfortunately. But you know what? I don't think it's all that bad. In fact, I think people are really taking advantage of, you know, the free time. They're catching up on their Netflix shows. Don't watch Tiger King for the love of God. Stay away from that show. Michael, what have you been doing the past the time, my friend, before we get into who you are and what you do?
Well, you know, I get a lot of calls from all sorts of different people, and they're all kind of a little freaked out, a little nervous. So I've been spending a lot of time talking to people about all this stuff. I did write that book, and so it came out last year, that other book. So I've been doing little interviews about that other thing, that book. And just mostly that's it. I do some online classes, and I've been doing that kind of stuff still. And but God, I've just been staying in and talking to people. My job's kind of good because I don't see a whole lot of people. I talk to most of the people on the phone, so it's pretty easy for me. But I do a lot of ghost bustings and stuff, so that's different. Some of the people I had scheduled to go to their house, they're kind of stuck because I can't come there, and they're a little nervous because they told the ghost that I was coming, so they're afraid that the ghosts are going to get them.
Just like, you know, I called the exterminator. I don't want you to be upset, but guess what? You got a pardon from the paranormal warden. COVID-19 right. has saved your afterlife. And there you go. You're not going to get busted out. So when you say busted, I'm thinking you're probably meaning like spiritual clearings and stuff, right, Michael?
Yeah. It's you get rid of them one way or another. You want to bring them, like help them go to the light, or help, you know, there's a theory that there's spirits that are what they call earthbound, and they just kind of hang around Earth. And those are the ones that usually are bugging people because they're bored, or they just don't want to leave, and they don't know what to do. So sometimes they move things, or they make noises, or they turn lights on or off, or they make the walls bleed, or they shake things, and they just freak people out. And so then a person like me just comes in and just kind of helps them, escort them to the other side, or just if they don't want to, they just kick them out of the house, and then they just kind of seal up the house. But you're supposed to just help them to the other side, ease them to the light, you might say.
I've only ever had it happen to me once, you know, 6 years of paranormal investigation. And, you know, suddenly I was on my couch, and my dog at the time, God rest her soul, she's gone now, but kind of went over to the door and was just staring at the door. Not like her at all. Like, really intent, tail not wagging, just staring down the hall door. Now, this door went down to my basement, and I was just like, okay, what's going on here? And it was like, all right, I'm going to have to run the ghost box. What's happening here? And this thing was like, hello? I was like, yeah, you're not welcome here. Oh, okay, I'll get out. Bye. Like, I don't think these spirits are all evil, by the way. I think some of them are just kind of stuck here.
Yeah, I do. I think some of them don't even know they're dead. I've gone on Ghostbusters where they're like, what are you doing here? And it's like, well, what are you doing here? And then you have to tell them that, look, you're gone. Yesterday's news, you know, your pizza go, you're out of here. And you're not alive. And they're just as shocked as can be. Then it's like, well, no wonder everybody's walking through my house like that. They just didn't know. And some people, they died really fast. So it's kind of a shock and they're just kind of walking around getting used to it. And it's not always these terrible, you know, devilish things. They're just sometimes confused. And so a lot of times they're attracted to people. So the old psychics used to call it shining, because the people that have these psychic abilities, they shine, or they consider them shining. And not everybody that has that, those gifts are necessarily use them. Like they're not always psychic, or they're not always readers or whatever. They just have that natural ability. Like it's maybe runs in the family, or it's just something that they have, you know. Like some people are really good with painting or math or computers or whatever. And some people just have this kind of natural ability to pick up this kind of stuff. And so when you're a dead guy and you're bored and there's nothing to do, you're going to be attracted to people that kind of have that light, or more likely to see you, you know, more likely to pay attention to you. And so they go to people's places, not always because they like the place, just because they like the person, or they think that there's a chance that person's going to pay attention to them. And sometimes it's, you know, most of the time it's just stupid. You know, it's most of the time it's simple things, things moving, your lights turning on and off, or sense that somebody's there, or just kind of creepy vibes. And I think people's imaginations kind of go a little wild, and then they assume it's a lot worse. But the jobs that I do now are, I think that I think that introduction was probably written like 10 years ago, because I've been doing it for like 45 years.
What? And, oh, my goodness. Yeah. So really, there's another 10 years on top of that?
Well, 10 years?
Holy yeah. God. Come on, that we never even had, you know, electronics back then. That's a lie. That's a lie. But you know, one of the founding fathers of the paranormal, for, you know, research and investigation, swore that the most important piece of equipment he ever had was just a pen and paper, right? So there you go.
Yeah.
Thank you, Hans Holzer, if you're listening. We love you, bro. So, you know, I'm reading your bio, you know, you somewhat reluctantly went to psychic camp back when you were younger. So tell me a little tiny bit about that experience.
I totally was reluctant. Okay, so you got to understand, I didn't like this stuff at all. I'm the youngest of four kids, and we grew up in a nice upper middle class house. You know, everything was great. It was you know, idyllic setting for just a normal thing. And then we started having these weird things happen, like weird stuff. My older brother, who was 6 years older than I was seven, and so he was like 14. He was learning how to play the drums, and he was like a really cool teenager, you know, like, you know, a hip guy, and you know, an artist and a football player and a musician and all that kind of stuff. And he was learning how to play the drums, and he sucked. He didn't sound good at all. But we were all upstairs eating dinner, and we were used to him sucking, so it wasn't that big of a deal. But all of a sudden, it sounded good for like a couple minutes, like it sounded tight. And we thought, well, damn, he's playing better. Or he put on one of those records, How to Play the Drums Better By, or whatever, but it sounded better. And then all of a sudden we heard the cymbals being knocked over, the drums being knocked over, and the door flying open. And my brother came flying upstairs. And in my house, my dad was a big guy. He was a big, imposing like guy. And he didn't believe in, you know, showing fear, especially with men. He just didn't do it. And so when my brother came through the door, he was scared. It was the first time that I had ever seen him afraid. And it was kind of interesting to him. I remember thinking, whoa, what happened? And he was really afraid. And he didn't want to talk about it at first. And finally, my mom convinced him to talk about it. And he said that he was down there just playing the drums. And he looked to his left. And this guy comes through the wall. And plain as day. And he comes through the wall and he parks himself in front of my brother who's playing the drums. And so my brother gets really scared and he puts his head down and starts playing. And that's when he sounded good and really tight. And he looked up and he saw this guy and he was just like, holy crap. And he kept freaking out. And finally he asked whoever it was to leave because he didn't know what to do. And then this thing, whoever it was, kind of acknowledged him and went, oh, okay. And then just went through the other wall. And that's when he threw the drumsticks down and knocked over the drums and came flying upstairs and blah, blah, blah. And when he was telling this story, I know none of us really believed him because we didn't believe in ghosts. And it wasn't something that was just stupid. But there was this really strange feeling in the air, like there was something going on. Something was going on. And so about a week later, we were all upstairs eating dinner again, and this time without my brother wouldn't go downstairs without like a priest. He always had to have somebody go downstairs with him. And there's this Lazy Susan. We have this Lazy Susan and this salt shaker who's on this Lazy Susan, and it gets up, and we're all talking, and it gets up and moves across the table, kind of slow, not too fast, but fast enough to where you can see it. It moves across the table, and it drops between my mother and my dad. And we were all talking, and we stopped and looked at this thing, and it was the weirdest thing, because it wasn't like there was organ music playing in the background. It wasn't like there was just a narration. It was just, you were looking at something, you couldn't believe it. You were like, your eyes were just like playing tricks. And so when it dropped, we all went, whoa! And then my brother starts yelling, see, I told you there's something in the house. And because we had been giving him so much crap about, hey, why don't you invite your friend over for dinner? The whole week. And then when this happened, he was like, see, I told you. And my dad was really pissed. He's like, hey, come on now. Fuck yeah, but don't be doing this stuff right now. Because, everybody's on it. My dad didn't think at all it was a ghost or anything like that. But there was that strange feeling in the air. And then, stuff kept happening. You'd open up a cupboard and stuff would slide out in your hands. And you'd think, well, that's odd. But you rationalize it in your head, like, well, maybe it was at an angle or something. Or the lights would go on and off. And you think, well, it's probably a storm or maybe a bad fuse. Or somebody would come up behind you, tap you on the shoulder, and you'd turn around and nobody would be there. And you knew somebody was there, but you thought, well, you're probably just, mind's playing tricks because of all the stuff that's going on. But this stuff kept happening, and it didn't happen at a particular time. It didn't happen with particular people. It happened at all sorts of different times and with different people. And it was enough to where my mom, who was like a stay-at-home mom, started kind of getting a little nervous. She was home all the time, so she was getting a little antsy. And she decided to talk to our minister. We went to a Baptist church. And the minister said that, that he thought maybe she might have had some female issues. So he suggested a gynecologist. And so she went to the gynecologist, and this guy said, well, no, sounds like you're crazy. You might want to go to a psychiatrist. She went to everybody. She just kept going to these different people. They all kept going, yeah, I don't know. Maybe there's a chemical imbalance here or something, blah, blah, blah. The only person that took her seriously was this lady, a lady named Mrs. Roop, who worked out of her car. She was a psychologist. She was just one of those strange psychologists that, never bathed or anything like that. But she was a nice lady. And she told my mom that, it sounds like you got ghosts in your house. And my mom's like, no, I don't think I have ghosts. She goes, well, yeah, it sure sounds like it. Maybe you should talk to this lady in St. Paul. I live in Minneapolis, and St. Paul's just across the river. And so my mom took her name. Her name is Mrs. Olson. And my mom took her name and wrote it down and came back from the little car meeting that she had with this lady. And my mother used to collect Bibles. I guess she was raised Catholic, but she used to collect Bibles, which I didn't know until that day. But and when she came home from this meeting, all her Bibles were stacked up on her bed in kind of a weird way. And it freaked my mom out. And she automatically assumed it was one of us kids for, I don't know why, but she just did. And so she put the Bibles away. And I remember when I got home from school, she yelled at me because she said, you know, you shouldn't play with the Bibles. That's bad. And I, first of all, I didn't even know that she had Bibles. Second of all, it's like, why would I even do that? But whatever. She was, it was just, she was kind of nervous. And she yelled at all of us when we came home. She made dinner. She, you know, we were talking about stuff. And then she went upstairs to grab something and she screamed. And we all ran upstairs. And the Bibles were on the bed again, just all stacked up, really weird. And I think for my mom, that was the turning point. That's when she said, "Oh, screw this, we gotta figure something out." And it changed that from that point on. Everything just changed in my life because then my mother called up Mrs. Olson, and Mrs. Olson did confirm that that yeah, we got ghosts, but not only that, but we were going to develop our psychic awareness. That I have a sister, Echo, and my sister, Nikki, they both do it. My mother was going to do it. One of us was going to do it, whatever. And so she told her to come in and bring my sister, Echo. So she, her and my sister went, and she explained all the stuff that was going to happen and explained why, or why she thought that was going to happen, that she felt that we were going to write books about it and do our life around it. And all this stuff, it wasn't great news for me. You know, it was like, shut up. I don't, you know, this is the last thing I want to do. But for my mom, it was great. She loved it. She is, this is like I said, during the 60s. And this was a time when women were kind of changing, and she was a stay at home mom. And I think she wanted kind of something of her own. And so for her, it was like, this was great. She loved it. She just grabbed onto it. And, in grabbing onto it, she would go to places where other psychics were going. And like back then, you know, it was considered mental illness. Like if you were psychic, you know, you were either schizophrenic or there was just something wrong with you. So people didn't, there wasn't like psychics every 10 feet now, like there are. Back then, you just, you know, you had to go underground, and you had to, like, there was this lady that had this church of people that had these weird experiences, and they hang out in the bottom of this church. And so my mom started going to this group, and then the group started coming over the house because it was way better than the church. And my mother and this church lady, or that ran it, was, her name was Bertie, just loved my mom and loved my sister. And so that's how I grew up from 7 on up, was just living in a house with a bunch of psychics that were always coming over and always practicing. And so, yeah, psychic camp sucked because, you know, I love football camp. I love basketball. I love all that stuff. But I just, you know, psychic camp was just one of those weird things where, you know, you'd drive for hours and then you'd have to go to some forest hideaway place. And there was always a different theme. You know, there was always something weird. At these places, there's never a normal camp. It was always like, you know, one camp was about just the strangeness of life, or not life, but how they had vampires at this place, and freaking vampires. That was probably the most amazing camp that I went to, was that the vampire camp. My mom didn't even tell me about it until we were half there. It was in Michigan, and it was in these woods. It's always in the woods, but. This camp was, oh man, I was probably 10 or 11, and this place just freaked me out because, and I had been going to a bunch of camps before that, you know, for a variety of different things like nature or spirit camps or fairy camps or, you know, different weird camps. But this place was just, it was so strange. I've never seen anything like that. And, you know, I was pretty skeptical most of my life, even though all this stuff was happening, even though I could see it with my own eyes, I just didn't want to believe any of this stuff. I really didn't. I really didn't, because it was just, it was weird, man. I just didn't like it. I didn't like it. My friends would come home from school with me, and they'd see these people practicing all this weird stuff and, you know, humming and trying to levitate and spinning, and, you know, the occasional ghost would show up, and, you know, it was terrible to have a slumber party at my house because...
Dude, I wish I had you as a friend growing up. Like, you would be the coolest friend ever, man. Like, come on.
It's like, embarrassing as hell.
No, this is great. It sounds to me like you had, like, wow. Like, you didn't have to... stumble into this stuff, like, as hard as a lot of people. It was bred into you. You know, I always ask people, what is their why? And, you know, there's so many people who come on my show and grace the airwaves. And I always ask the why question, because it's one thing to be psychic, but it's also another thing to actually act upon it and use your gifts to help people. So why don't you tell me a little tiny bit about your why?
Well, you know, my why is more of a necessity now. It's so when I got into it when I was a kid, it was really just to get the information out, because these people would show up and they would start talking to me, like these little spirit guides or dead people. They would come up and they would say, "Hey, could you tell so and so about this or that?" So my why in the beginning was to just like shut these people up. Really, that's all. I didn't have any delusions, or I didn't envision myself being a psychic or doing anything like that. I just wanted to get the information out so that they would stop bugging me. So, and I would do these readings like at bars or restaurants, any place that was really loud or just kind of anywhere that it wasn't like a ceremony, like it was when I was growing up. Like when you do readings when I was a kid, everything was really quiet and everything, you know, they'd give a little cup of water to spirit and you'd do a little prayer and all that stuff. And, you know, I didn't like that. So when I was doing readings, I think I started early in my late teens, I was, you know, I'd go to bars and say, "Hey, your dad, your grandfather's going to die in a couple of weeks," you know, just to kind of keep it so that I didn't have to get serious about everything all the time. So my why in the beginning was really just to get the information out. And then it changed. I started doing readings a lot, and I started doing more celebrities and hooking up with some people. And I was getting lucky with some of my predictions. Some of the stuff was coming true. And I was getting kind of a big head. I was getting magazines and doing a lot of television little things. And, you know, I was a kid. And I was thinking I was damn amazing, and my ego was getting pretty bad, and so I was doing this local radio show, and it went out to the whole state, and in the show they were asking me about all the psychic stuff, and I was just, you know, giving them the answers, and I was thinking I was just everything wrapped up in a bag. And then this guy says, "Hey, can you get me a reading?" And I'm like, "Yeah, duh. Of course I can get him a reading." And so he goes, "Great." So I give him a reading on air. It's live on air. And I'm telling you, everything I said to this guy was wrong. Everything. Like I'd say, "Geez, you know, it feels like you're having a hard time at work right now, but you know, it's probably going to lift." And I go, "Well, not really. I just got employed in a year. You know, they just hired me with how." Okay, let's try something else. How about my kids? Do you see anything with my kids? And I'd be, "Oh, geez, well, okay, so your boys are," and he goes, "No, wait, I don't have boys, I have girls." And I said, okay, well, your girls are having a hard time with school, right? Everything. I said, no, they're actually not. They just got accepted into this. And this guy was trying to be really sweet about it. He was trying to be kind. He was like embarrassed for me. And so every time I'd say something and it was wrong, which was everything I said, he would change the subject. "Okay, well, how about this?" And everything I said, "Well, your mom, I don't know about your mom, if she's going to be okay or not." And he said, "Yeah, no, she's not, because she's dead. Okay, how about we talk about anything else?" And finally, at the end, he gives me that $20 bill and he goes, here, you're going to need this money. Because I've sucked. I mean, I completely sucked. I didn't just kind of, I completely did.
So why do you think there was this dry spell? Do you think it's because spirit was letting you know you're not the one in charge, or what?
Yeah, you know, that's the whole gist of the whole thing, is that it's not about the psychic. It's not about who you are. You're the messenger. You're the mouthpiece. And I had to learn that. I had to learn that it wasn't about who I was. It was about the message. It was about what I was saying and how I was saying it. And I didn't get that. I didn't know that. I thought it was all about how great and wonderful I was, that I was a special person, that I was getting all these special things, and that's just the opposite. So for like a year, I couldn't pick up my clothes. I couldn't pick up anything. And I had to go to work at this department store selling refrigerators because I couldn't pick up on anything. And my psychic Bertie, who was listening to the show, who I think put the hex on me, said, you know, you just needed to learn it. You needed to come down a few spots because you were thinking pretty highly of yourself and you forgot what this was all about. So, and then one day this lady walked in and she wanted to buy a refrigerator. And I said, okay, come on, she wants your local other refrigerator, excuse me. And all of a sudden I got all this information about her. All of a sudden it was like the door just opened up and all of a sudden I got all this stuff about her husband, about him cheating on her, and that this guy was going to get really sick and that she was going to be stuck staying with him if she stayed with him, but she shouldn't stay with him because he's been, and it was like all this stuff. I didn't know what to say to her because you're not supposed to just go up and ambush somebody.
God, no. Yeah. It's like, oh, by the way, your life's about to be terrible. Yeah. What refrigerator do you want?
Yeah.
I highly suggest a Whirlpool and getting ready for your husband.
Exactly. You got two for one. So that after that, it just changed into the why was really just to help people understand that they can actually tap into their own stuff, that they can actually use the resources that they have and let them make them aware of their intuition. Because I think everybody has it. It's just that there's, you know, some people, like I say, have an easier time developing it than others, but everybody has it. And if they trusted it, what they could do with it, and eventually they wouldn't need psychics. They wouldn't need anybody. They could just trust themselves. And that's what now the why is to point out what they're picking up is right, or whether it's not wrong, or whether it's right or wrong, or the opportunities. Because I'm a future kind of guy, you know, I'm a future psychic. There's, you know, some psychics are really good with like finding things, or some psychics are really good with past lives, or, you know, you got your mediums that just sit and talk to your dead relatives and friends. But I'm a future kind of guy. It's just, I pick up on stuff, you know, coming up, but, you know, relationships, opportunity, you know, just whatever. And the reason I do that is because it's more interesting to me, and I can check my accuracy and see if I was right about so-and-so events coming up. And it's just, it was more interesting to me. I thought that if I was going to do this, that's what I wanted to do.
Well, I mean, I think of like the most famous psychic of all time, even though I still think he was more of a medium because he apparently was very high when he did most of his predictions, is Nostradamus. I mean, whenever there's something crazy in the world that's going on, people turn to this guy. Like, we're talking hundreds of years ago, this guy was prevalent.
And yeah, that guy was hot.
And he was just incredibly accurate with a lot of his stuff. And, you know, some people from the realms of science say, well, you know, he made so many quatrains, they're being misinterpreted. And, you know, there's the whole, we call it the Simpsons effect, where eventually things they talk and joke about or mention will eventually come true because, you know, law of averages. But, like, this guy predicted 9/11. Like, he was one letter off Hitler. I mean, come on. You don't get that good, right?
You know, I can't do that.
Like, how accurate can some people actually be? And I think that's why his predictions stood the test of time. You know what I mean? So, speaking of test of time, okay, we've had lots of psychics on here. And, you know, I think of my good friend Dee McMurray, who actually predicted that, you know, some of the royals will be leaving the house. He predicted that 2 months before it happened. So, God love him. He predicted it right here on the show. How about you? Are you picking up anything? You know, this whole COVID-19 thing right now is just, it's what's on everyone's mind, obviously. And, you know, are you feeling anything about that, or is it still all up in the air?
You know, with my stuff, I kind of, it's more of an individual thing. The cool thing for me is that it's really giving everybody a chance to kind of reboot themselves, look at things. You know, from relationships to what they do to, like, if they're going to die, would they want to keep doing what they're doing? Do they like keeping their head in the sand, or do they want to look at different things? So for me, it's more of an individual kind of stuff, because I know I've never really been a worldly kind of a guy when it comes to psychic stuff. Every once in a while, like you can tell, like when 9/11 came up, you can tell like a month before something was about to happen just because you could feel it, you know, there was something in the air. And then there's psychics that just do that kind of specific stuff. They do that worldly stuff. You know, that's all they do. And they're really good at it. But they suck at the individual stuff. I kind of suck at the worldly stuff. But I'm better at the individual stuff, like how this is going to affect this person or that person. And I mean, you could tell that there was something going on. You could tell that there was some unworldly event was going to be happening in the fall. You could feel that in the fall, just because they were, your little spirit or my spirit guides were trying to warn me about getting ready and being prepared and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, having a psychic family, they were doing the same thing with my sisters too. My mother's passed, but my two sisters are still into it, and they had the same thing. So, you know, there was kind of a warning thing, but, and my sister, I think my sister Nikki does more worldly stuff, or no, Echo does more worldly stuff. I forget what they do, but they, she's more about what this all means or how this is affecting everybody. Me, you know, it's more about an individual kind of stuff. How it affects this person or that person, what they're going to change, how they're going to change.
Like I for one have, I hate to say it, but like the life I lead, I'm kind of an isolated person anyway. Like I am a foster parent to mentally fragile kids. So, you know, kids who are in the system who, you
that's
know,
nice.
Yeah, I love my job. I'm one of those people who can actually say I love what I do. I don't love getting up every night with the baby. Don't get me wrong. There's parts of my job that suck, and giving them back is always really tough. But I love my job.
That would be really hard.
Oh, it's incredibly hard. But I love my job. I really, really do. But what I've noticed is even though I'm still working 24/7, I got a little guy with me right now, actually. Even though I'm still working 24/7, this COVID-19 hasn't really affected my job wise. But what it's done is it's kept my family under one roof, basically. And like,
yeah, isn't that nice?
It's, you know, it could be stressful because there's three kids here and my wife and two cats and many, many tropical fish. But the reality of it is I hate to sound selfish, but I'm kind of loving it. Like,
yeah,
kind of loving it. Don't get me wrong. It's frustrating when your kids, you know, you need a break from your kids, obviously. Like anybody in the right mind knows that. But the idea that we're all kind of under the same roof, and it's just suddenly people are painting walls in the house and moving around furniture and, you know, I've sat back and I'm actually revamping my entire show and how I do it and how I'm going to actually throw my show out there in the near future. So
exactly.
I feel like amazing? When you said the word reboot, it really struck me. I was like, wow, man, he knows. Yeah, that's how I feel too. And it's kind of weird, but it's true. I really do feel like this is an opportunity for many people to look at their lives and say, am I happy where I'm too? Am I going to sit on my thumbs or am I going to do something about it? Which brings me to, you know, what your specialty is. And I forgive me, of course, for trying to put you on the spot and trying to figure out what's going on with COVID-19. I think you're probably far more in tune with what's going to happen with certain people and probably people you're talking to, such as myself. So, you know what? I guess here it is, the elevator pitch. What do you see in my near future? Do you see anything at all? Michael, I tell you one thing. I do see my near future is I'm going to have to get back up my weight soon. I'm missing them now. I threw my back out a couple of weeks ago, so I'm getting back at that this week. It's happening.
Well, with you, actually, this is going to change your life in a broader way. I know you said that you were you're an isolated kind of a guy, and I appreciate that, but that's not going to be the way it's going to stay. It's actually for you, it kind of changes. You don't go back to being an isolated guy. It's like, you're not going to be able to be that same person that you were. It's like something's happening even while you're going through this. It's like they're working on you in ways that you'll see. It's like this, you're not going to be the same guy. You're not going to be able to go back and do the same thing. So you're going to actually, they're going to force you out, which is what the dead guys have been trying to do for a long time with you. You're a pain in the ass for those guys. So they don't, you know, they've been trying to figure out a way to do it, but, I think they got a good plan, and the plan is to kind of get you out, bring your show out. You're supposed to come out from underneath from under the rug and bring it out more, because you're supposed to go bigger with it. and you haven't. And so this is, that's what's going to be changing, is that the workshop is actually going to get much bigger. And you can actually do it. You're actually going to like it, because you're going to have a solid, a pretty solid foundation at home. So you're going to be able to go off and do a lot more stuff. But your thing's all about, it's all going to be very different for you. It's just not, you're not going to be the same guy, and you're going to like it. You're going to like it. But they have to put you on stage. You've been trying really hard to do this and hang out in the audience, but they're going to put you on stage. So you're going to like it.
And it's been a long time since I've been on stage, so there you go. It's weird, I kind of grew up in front of people many times. Oh, hello?
Hi.
Oh, there you are. I'm getting interference. I don't know if I'm hearing you scratch the mic or what. Oh, God, maybe it's demons. Nah, it's Saturday. They wouldn't bug me on Saturday. I look at like where I came from in my past as a reason, kind of like why I keep to myself now, because, for the latter part of, 13 years, I was in front of crowds wrestling, and also just had a very large circle of friends from that. So really, for the last decade or so, it's been kind of the hermit life, really. And
I know, and that's okay, but it's time that you go back. But it's not like it was in the past. It's time to go back to where you belong, which is where, up on stage.
Cool.
Just different message, different stuff. Reaching a lot of different people, that kind of thing.
Well, that's exciting. Okay, cool.
Yeah, it doesn't suck. I mean, it really does. I think you're going to like it. I think you're actually really going to like it. But it's just, you're kind of their tool, so they got to use you. And your interest and excitement and wonderment is what they're using, because you're going to be drawing in a lot of people with all that.
Mr. Bowden, you're the only person I know who can call me a tool, and I'll be happy about it. So that's enough about
it. It's what they want. It's what they kind of groomed you all along for that. All these little things that you've gone through have kind of set you up. I get why you've been a hermit. I do. But it's kind of the rebirth thing right now. It's just time, and you're going to see. They're going to actually start talking to you, kind of whispering in your ear. It's not quite now, but it will happen in a little bit, a couple weeks. And you're going to start getting these ideas, and you're going to start thinking, okay, you're going to slowly come out of that little cave, and you're going to be embracing it, and you're actually going to like it. It's going to feel like going home in some ways. You're going to have a strong feeling of this, the house stuff, but you are going to be going home. And reaching a lot of different people, going a lot of different places. You'll see. Don't worry. They don't want me to blow it or make you nervous or anything like that. But you're gonna like it.
Okay.
You're gonna like it.
Well, it's good to know I'm going somewhere. That's the main thing, right?
Yeah, you're going somewhere.
This COVID thing is not gonna let coat my lungs and death and do me in. So I'm feeling great tonight now. Yeah, okay, enough about my future. I want to hear about yours. You told me that the immediate sheet that I got is kind of out of date by like 10 years.
Yeah.
So when it says you're currently working on your second book, what book are you actually working on?
So that book is already out. It was supposed to be called 7 Reasons Why Not to Get a Reading, but my publisher didn't want to do it. So it's called A Psychic's Life. And it's really... what it's about is just different stories about how people have trusted their intuition, how to trust their intuition. It's about psychics, about what kinds of psychics there are, what's are good, what are bad, what's a good reading, what's not a good reading, who's real, who's not real, that kind of stuff. It's just, I've noticed there's been a big surge in a lot of psychics in the last 10 years, and which is great, but a lot of people just assume I've noticed a lot of egos, a lot of divas in the psychic community, which is just funny to me. And so there's just an explanation of a breakdown of what certain psychics can and can't do.
Interesting.
And it's just like one of the chapters is called My Third Eye is Bigger Than Your Third Eye. And it's all about that whole competition between psychics, because psychics are just ruthless. You know, they talk crap about other psychics because they don't want.
Oh, but that's. Oh, my goodness. But, Michael, that's in every facet of paranormal, you know? There's always, like, ghost hunting groups who are feuding with each other and, right. You know.
Just dumb.
It's like, yeah. Not only do people got to, like, deal with people, like, you know, like, who are trying to debunk everyone all the time. You got to deal with people who love the same thing you do but don't agree with you, you know? Right. It's like the Protestants and the Catholics. Same thing, but guess what? We're going to butt heads, right?
Right. And so that was what, yeah, because, you know, I've had a lot of psychics come after me because I tend to be pretty blunt about things. And if people have a problem with me, they can certainly talk to me about it. I don't mind. But a lot of them have problems with the way I am. And I've heard terrible things about me. But they all just want to, they're a little threatened or they think that I'm going to expose them for whatever. I could care less. I'm not a big, my sisters are both more in the psychic community. I'm not really into it that much. I've never really have been. I mean, you know, I like sage and patchouli just as much as the next guy. I just don't take a bath in it. And I think some of these people are really into it and everything has meaning. And if the, something happens, it means this happened or whatever. I'm not that deep of a guy. I'm pretty shallow. The book was born out of frustration, out of listening to so-called experts, because the first thing you learn about when you're a psychic is you'll never learn half the stuff that some of these people know, or it'll take several lifetimes to know, and that ego has nothing to do with it. You know, I learned young just how dangerous that can be and how foolish that can be and how stupid it is. But there's, I run across these psyches that have just, they just went to one class and now they're teaching it or something. It just blows me away.
You know, you've had some pretty high-profile clients, and, you know, come on, man, Lethal Weapon, Predator 2, I mean, God, I mean, Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas, Gary Busey, really?
Oh, well, no, yeah, no, Gary, I love Gary, yeah, I do a lot more people, I do, most of them, I don't, I love Gary, Gary's great, and Melanie's great, and, yeah, that's funny, I just don't mention most of the people. I love Patrick Swayze. I loved him. He was exactly what you thought he was. He was just that guy. But most of the people that I do, so here's the thing. It's not a great job. It doesn't make me a better psychic because I talk to celebrities, because it really doesn't. I talk to them because I'm a future guy and I see opportunities coming up for people. And most of the time, when an opportunity comes up for somebody, like say a normal person, I know that they're not going to take it. They're just not. They either don't think they deserve it, or they're afraid of it, or they don't think they can do it, or whatever. But I know that they're not going to take it. And so for me, it's kind of frustrating because I don't know what to tell them. You know, I don't know. You know, besides join a bowling league, I don't know what to tell them. So it's frustrating, but with an actor or a writer or a director, I know that when I see an opportunity coming up, that they're going to take it. They got it. You know, most of them are a little narcissistic, and if they don't have an opportunity, they just die. You know, it just kills them. So for me, it fits more of the style of how I do readings. And like I said, it's not great. In fact, it's been disheartening in some cases because, you know, some of these people I've done readings for, I grew up really liking, you know, and then I do readings for them and I just want to wash my phone. I can't stand them, you know?
Oh God.
But then there's other people like, you know, Brad Pitt or some of these other people that are just really great people, like really great people, like really good guys. And there's a few of them and you think, damn, you know, but not everybody's like that. You know, most of them aren't like that. But I've gotten into it because it's just what I what I do, you know, a future guy.
Yeah, well, I guess for your future guy, you know, and you, I mean, the first thing that pops in my mind when I think of psychic is not necessarily where I'm going, you know. The first thing that pops in mind is what's going on right now. And how does it relate to me? So to have someone who's more future focused is actually kind of interesting, you know, Michael. Like, and I think that that's probably why you're kind of drawn to those people. It just, as soon as I seen Gary Busey there, I was just like, man, come on, really? That's so cool. I think that's awesome.
Yeah, he's a really great guy. I wish his hearing was better. He's really sucks at hearing. So
yeah,
when you have a conversation with him, you have to talk really loud.
And you repeat like 10 times, and yeah.
But he's a smart guy, and he's really a sweet guy. But I think because he's so, it's frustrating for him to hear, he gets a little impatient, so he yells at people.
Yeah.
And so he's not for the faint of heart, you know? But I've known him for so long and we've had arguments about stuff. So we can yell at each other. It's not a big deal.
Just imagine. You know, I always get a little starstruck when I see people with those kind of connections. So, you know, good for you. I think it's wonderful.
But the thing is, there's a belief among the old psychics that if you're still here, you're still learning, which means that you still got stuff to learn. And there's like some of these actors, I'm telling you, there's nothing to them. They're as shallow and there's just nothing to some of these people. And so you think, oh, they're great, you know, their characters are great. But, you know, like the actors that I do that are the more professional, you really go by their stage names. They don't have other names. And so when I talk to somebody, I talk to who they really are, and they see themselves as a character. I mean, it's hard to explain, but they're not worthy of your admiration, is what I'm trying to say.
Okay. Well, please tell me that my hero, Joss Whedon, is a good guy. Because if you've ever talked to Joss Whedon, he's the guy who made Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
Yeah, I've never talked to that person.
Yeah, Angel. One of my favorite shows. In fact, if you ever go back and watch the old Angel series, man, it's a love letter to the paranormal. That entire series, like way before Supernatural tried to make it cool, he had people talking about, you know, Illuminati and law firms that control the world and stuff like that. Like, he had that all in there already on the show.
Cool. Yeah, and some of them really are worth your admiration. Some of them they are really cool people.
One of my favorite things, Buffy obviously struck a nerve with me right away. It was my favorite show growing up. It still is. I try to watch it, you know, every couple of years, the entire thing. It's a lot of episodes.
What connected you to it?
I think it was the character James Marsters played as Spike. This rebel outcast, no soul vampire that eventually took Angel's place as the hero. No one expected it. I love that. Such a cool thing. It was also one of the first shows on TV that, you know, in fact, it was the first show to ever have a gay couple on. It was the first TV show to ever have Death's a character be permanent. Like, back on Space, here in Canada, Space is a big deal, like, back then. It was, like, this network that had all these cool sci-fi shows. And, you know, when people got bumped off on Buffy, it was a big deal. So, there you go. And, you know, it's the fact, too, that you can sit back and you can basically watch Sarah Michelle Gellar grow up. I thought that was pretty cool, too. So, definitely. It's just the paranormal part of it all. I mean, she killed vampires, but there's everything in that show. There's witches and psychics and all kinds of stuff. It's like Doctor Who, basically, for the paranormal more people. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know, kind of in closing here, you know, as we've gone to the end of our interview here, you know, I'd like to give people a chance to kind of promote some of their work and stuff that on my shows. I think it's really important. And
sweet of you.
Here's the thing. It's so easy to get lost in the shuffle when you're talking to someone, especially anybody who is on the same energy level as you. Like, I can talk to guests on this show and we'll talk for an hour and it's just like no connection. It can happen. Not very often, but it can happen. But then there's someone like me and you who will basically banter on, and not once did we drop your website. Nothing. This entire conversation, dude. We've got to do something for you here. So go ahead, lay it on us. Where can people get in touch with you?
My website, it kind of sucks, just so you know. I'm working on it. And it's michaelbodine.com, you know, and yeah. But it is, I'm trying to get better at it. And it's really not that, you know, a lot of bells and whistles or anything, just a little, it'll show you where my two books are. And it doesn't really do a whole lot after that. But, and then, you know, like when I'm going to be speaking or where I'm going to be speaking or stuff like that. Or if I'm having ghostbusting classes, because I teach ghostbusting classes, because you got to do that, because you don't want to be ghostbusting forever. So you got to get people to do it for you. yeah, so that's what it is. Michael Bonita got, and if you want to do readings, you know, you can book a reading. But here's the thing. It's not, this is going to sound terrible, but not everybody that calls me really needs a reading. You know, like when people call me, I'll get an idea, from their first name, whether they want to, where they really need a reading or not. And if they do, I'll definitely call you. I swear to Jesus, I will. But sometimes you don't need a reading, you know? And if you're just curious, there's like a ton of psychics out there that you can ask, you know, and they'll talk to you until you're turned to a smurf, you know, they'd love to talk to you. But I don't, you know, I charge like $300 for a reading, and you know, wow, that's a lot of dough for somebody if they're just curious. So I don't usually, if I don't call back, it's not an insult. It just means that you probably don't need a reading from me, you know?
Gotcha. Yeah.
It's just one of those deals.
That's a refreshing thing to hear from somebody, because, you know, so often people will do anything for a dollar. So it's good to hear that, you know, you'll be like, you know, you don't really need a reading. You're good. Yeah. Save your money. You know, you might you're going to need that $300 next week because something's going to happen to your car.
It does. But it's these bad, I mean, it's selfishly that I'm saying this, because if I give a reading to somebody and there's really nothing to tell them, you know, they get pissed and they don't, you know, they're like, you call that a reading, psychic boy, you know, and I don't blame them, because there's really nothing, you know, you can't stretch out for an hour. Yeah, it's going to be just fine.
Yeah, but I mean, you're doing mediumship. You're getting information from an unknown source to beginning.
I know, but it's stupid.
Right? And people like, they think you can perform on command. It's like, no, I'm not a dog. Like, I got, that's,
well,
like,
I kind of can, but it, you know, sometimes what you say isn't that great. You know, it's just not much to tell.
And also, accuracy is a big thing too. Like,
I know, I agree.
Like,
who knows?
And here's another thing too. What happens if you're, say, I'm in an apartment building and there's like, God knows how many people in the building, and you're picking up on those people or something. Like, you don't know, like, how in tune this gift is, do you? Or you know what I mean?
Well, you it's like you try to focus on the person in front of you. But the only problem with that is if the person in front of you is really boring and there's nothing to say, but the guy at 2B is really exciting, then you kind of just, your mind wanders. It's like, oh, this guy's got some interesting stuff coming up. And then you have to kind of, you know, pretend. Like, okay, I used to do couples a long time ago. And
oh boy,
the problem with that
was, I can already see a problem with that.
I did this reading for this guy and this wife, and she was having an affair with another man.
Oh no.
And she was scared to death that I was gonna say something to this guy. But so I had to approach it like I was talking to her about this other guy, but really I had to make it look like I was talking about her husband. So I tried to incorporate it, give her these kind of key words, like, you know, it's not always easy to get together. And he looked at me and goes, no, we're pretty accessible. You know, I had to try and mix in this little stuff so that she would get it. And she did get it, what I was trying to say, because afterwards she texted me and said, thank you for not saying anything about what's his name. But that was interesting, because this guy had no clue. And I didn't, you know, it was a dilemma. So after that, I stopped doing couples because I don't want to.
It's like, tough, and then there's like it's such a hard sell too, because it's like, you know, oh my God, like, I don't care. Like, you cannot be in a good committed relationship and be 100% truthful with each other, because, you know, you're annoying me right now. Your breath kind of smells bad. Like, this is the truth.
Yeah.
I love you, but, like, I don't want you around me right now. It's probably not right. What you want.
Right.
Oh, Michael, you're a riot. You know, the idea. I can just see, just visualize myself in the room with that couple. And, like, you're just like, well, there's some stuff I got to tell you. And the other person's like,
yeah,
he's in on this.
Yeah, just biting her lip. You know, she was sweating. You could see the sweat coming down.
But you know what, though? What a great idea for a reality show. You better be careful because Voice might pick you up for this one. You know,
yeah.
Just what is it? We'll call it psychic breakups. I think that'd be sick. People will love that. It's just negative enough. They'll be running on that. I can see it now. You like go knock on someone's door and be like, "Hey, man.
Yeah.
I got an idea. We're going to do a psychic sting with your lover, and we're going to show you that stuff's not going on." Man, you better be accurate in that show, though.
I'm looking for Charlie. Charlie's not here. Well, he was.
It's funny. I could feel Charlie still in the room. It's like, wait a second. And then she looks at you and says, "It wasn't in the room. It was on the kitchen table."
Exactly. Yeah. I wouldn't eat there if I were you.
Guys, his name is Michael Bodine, psychic through the stars. You know, he had a very interesting childhood. He even went to vampire camp. But you know what? He's the psychic that Melody Griffith, Gary Busey, Patrick Swayze, guys. www.michaelbodine.com. Thank you so very much for coming on the Odd Beautiful Land Paranormal Podcast. Love this interview. I love your energy. And I'll be sure to make sure all your buddies find out. I wonder if I tag Gary Busey, will he be able to see it on Twitter?
Say hi to him. Yeah.
I'm going to tag Patrick Swayze, but I got a feeling he's not going to be able to use the mouse. Ba-doom.
It might take him a little while to respond, but he will eventually.
Ba-doom. Okay. He'll get there. Anyway, you take care of yourself now, Michael. Bye now.
Thanks, buddy. It was great talking to you.
Well, the time to say goodbye is upon us. But don't worry, you can keep track of the Odd and Newfoundland Paranormal Podcast very easily. It's available on Stitcher, iTunes, Podbean, and TuneIn Radio. Just look for the Odd the Newfoundland Paranormal Podcast banner. Of course, if you'd like to keep up to date, you can always check out the Odd the Newfoundland Paranormal Podcast Facebook page, drop a like, and every single time a new show goes up, you'll be notified. You can also follow me, John Mallard, on Twitter, @ODDTONFLD. That's Odd to Newfoundland. Get your latest news on the podcast as well as the ever-popular parajoke of the day. From the oldest city in North America, I bid you adieu. From the Odd the Newfoundland Paranormal Podcast.